And welcome to everybody over on YouTube. This is Off the Hook Overtime. I think we all made it. And, people tell us that we're low on YouTube every week. I think the answer, Kyle, is just to raise this master volume, right? Wouldn't that just raise everything? Should I do that?
Yeah, you can try.
Or should I wait for the first complaint?
Whatever. Do whatever you want.
Well, I always do. But, okay, I'm going to raise it a little bit. You tell me if it's too much. And we're a little bit louder now. So hopefully that'll satisfy people. Yeah, I just discovered something. Basically, my cell phone, which I'm holding right here, we programmed into the local receiving phone number here to get a distinctive ring, which is basically two rings. What I'm doing now is I'm dialing *67 in front of that number and calling the Google Voice number that forwards to that local number. And listen to what happens. You hear that? Two rings. Two quick rings. How does it know it's me? I dialed *67. I dialed *67, and it's not even a local Verizon thing. I dialed *67, dialed the Google Voice number that then forwards to the Verizon local number, which knows my cell phone number. But again, I dialed *67. It shouldn't recognize me, but it does. How do you like that, guys?
Wait a second, though, because of the way that your setup is set up, I could see the caller ID on the screen behind you, and it said private caller.
I can't believe you can read the caller ID from there, but yes, you're right. It said private. So it's not being passed along as far as the number or the name, but the ring tells us that it is, in fact, recognizing my number somehow.
Yeah, that's like a display, but the point is the data still ends up, it still ends up identifying it in the call setup. It's not removed in the actual technical call exchange and the back and forth to complete that call.
If there's a telephone engineer out there or a phone freak extraordinaire who can explain what is happening here, we'd love to hear it, because that's something. That's, it makes you think twice before dialing *67 and assuming that your information is not being passed along.
Yeah, as if someone's running the phone system, they may be able to glean that information because maybe they have a deeper level of configuration. They're able to pull that data out of some kind of log or data that comes back, like information in the setup.
Yeah, definitely. I hear fire engines. That must be Robin Gila.
It indeed is us.
Yes, I did nothing, but I did want to confirm really quick that you do sound a lot better on YouTube. We all do. The volume sounds good from where I'm sitting.
Okay, well, with all the criticism of Google, I guess we have something nice to say for a change. Did you see this worst hacks of 2021 in Wired or on Wired.com? Interesting. When you say worst hacks, do you mean worst hacks like they really messed it up, or best hacks in that they pulled it off? I think it's the latter, in which case the article title is just, it's wrong. But number one on the list is Colonial Pipeline. Remember that? Early May, ransomware hit Colonial Pipeline, which operates a 5,500-mile pipeline that carries nearly half of the East Coast fuel, gasoline, diesel, natural gas, from Texas all the way to New Jersey. And as a result of that attack, the company shut down portions of the pipeline, both to contain the malware and because the attack knocked out its billing systems and they couldn't charge anybody. That was the most important thing. And as lines grew at gas stations throughout the southeastern U.S. and people started pouring gas into plastic bags and various crazy things like that, the Department of Transportation released an emergency order to allow expanded fuel distribution by truck. And the FBI named the notorious Russia-linked ransomware gang DarkSide as the perpetrator of the attack. And if you're going to be a perpetrator of an attack, you should have a name like DarkSide, I think. Not, Skipping Bunny or whatever people are coming up with.
I think it goes both ways with that. Mm. But, the more menacing one maybe strikes fear initially. But I don't know. That Bunny one, it could surprise you.
Yes, Alex?
Yeah, well, also in the wake of that, the TSA had issued its own directive to the liquefied natural gas providers, as well as oil companies, gas companies, and pipelines to implement certain basic information security controls, many of which a lot of these companies already had implemented. But, you know, this now got TSA involved in what we consider to be cybersecurity these days. And it got me invited to two different conferences to talk to a bunch of oil and gas and liquefied natural gas providers down in Charlotte, and then Charlotte, North Carolina, and then Palmetto Bluff, South Carolina.
That sounds like a blast. Wow. You got to talk to all these fossil fuel people.
I did. I've met literally hundreds and hundreds of them at these two conferences, talking about ransomware, how data breaches operate, what they can do to mitigate and avoid these types of blind spots. And so, yeah, really interesting stuff. And don't forget, I mean, the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack, once it had an impact on the supply chain for gas at gas stations, that was when we saw these idiotic instances of people going and filling up gas with plastic bags, and they thought people around the country thought that there was just going to be this run on gasoline, we're going to end up in some post-apocalyptic Mad Max like world, and a lot of people wound up getting hurt from trying to transport gasoline and things that weren't designed to transport gasoline. It was a really crazy time back in May.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. Doesn't take much to get people going nuts for one thing or another. But, you know, I just realized now, talking about this Colonial Pipeline, if you're going to have something as archaic as fossil fuels being transported in a pipeline, good to have a name like Colonial, which is also an outdated name. All right. Well, here's another one. Kaseya, am I pronouncing it correctly? Management software company. They were targeted in 2021. It basically affected supply chain in various ways. Beginning of July, hackers associated with the Russia-based ransomware gang Revil, that's R-E-V-I-L, exploited a flaw in Kaseya's virtual system administrator tool. VSA is popular among managed service providers, companies that run IT infrastructure for organizations that don't want to do it themselves. Well, maybe now they do. As a result of this interdependent ecosystem, attackers were able to exploit the flaw in VSA to infect as many as 1,500 organizations around the world with ransomware. And hilarity ensued, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that was another crazy one, too, in that, you know, the threat actors, the bad actors here, had piggybacked on a piece of what was very common network management and remote access type of software that was that Kaseya had developed, and much like the SolarWinds attack that preceded it, that type of software was used really to remotely manage large IT infrastructure, and also a lot of the infrastructure that was outsourced to third parties relied on Kaseya to manage this type of infrastructure, and so that allowed these threat actors to deploy their ransomware and affect ransomware events on a very large number of businesses and victim organizations really, really quickly. So, you know, this is, you know, thinking back in it, that's definitely something that would be worth a milestone acknowledgement during the actual Off the Hook program as well, because this was a, like the SolarWinds, another proof of concept that if you can exploit a piece of software that is found within a large number of organizations, you've given yourself access to a large number of organizations. And I think this dovetails with what we're seeing with the Log4j vulnerability as well.
Which threatens to be even bigger. And it's amazing how it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And of course, also in 2021, who can forget Twitch? Yeah, the live streaming service Twitch, which, by the way, is owned by Amazon. They confirmed they had been breached in October after an unknown entity released 128 gigabytes of proprietary data stolen from the company. Now, that breach included Twitch's complete source code. The company, you could start another Twitch. The company said at the time that the incident was the result of a server configuration change that allowed improper access by an unauthorized third party. The exact wrong unauthorized third party. Twitch denied that passwords were exposed in the breach, but acknowledged that information about individual streamers' revenue was stolen. In addition to the source code itself and streamer payout data from as far back as 2019, the Trove also contained information about internal Twitch, Amazon Web Services systems, and proprietary SDKs. Not a good year for Twitch. In fact, at the time, I know we were saying, that's it for Twitch. How can they possibly survive this? But apparently they're still around.
Yeah, they seem to have recovered, and yeah, it was a bad breach, but it also shows, you know, it's not always the be-all, end-all. It's not always the existential threat that organizations think it is. If you handle and remediate an information security incident properly, you can recover.
All right, well, you know, I'm kind of rooting for them there. You know, somebody gets punched in the stomach that hard, you really kind of want to see them get up again, take another one. No. Recover and live to see another day. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number, 802-321-HACK. And when someone else calls in, you'll hear that it's one long ring, not two short rings, because their number won't be recognized, whether it's private or not private. If you have something to say to us, something to reflect on for 2021, something to predict in 2022, or if you just want to make fun of the crazy device I'm wearing on me right now, which you can't see, but I think we described it well enough to for you to imagine it. This is your chance, 802-321-4225.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in hearing from callers tonight that would like to discuss what they thought was a milestone event or happening or occurrence within 2021. I think a diversity of viewpoints on this, especially from our friends overseas, would be really interesting.
Yeah, and recent weeks we've heard people from Eastern Europe, from hear that one long ring. Yeah, people from Eastern Europe, South Africa. We've had people from Asia. We've had people from Labrador calling us all over the world. It's really amazing, and we want to hear from you. 802-321-4225, and we have a caller on the line. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hello.
How you doing?
It's me. I have been forced to capitulate.
Oh, no. You've lost your landline, your copper line?
Yes. I'm scheduled to be converted to Fios on January 3rd. You can still hear the hum at the moment.
I'll miss the hum. I really will.
Well, that's not what I'll miss.
Yeah, you're right. What was the final blow?
They would not give in.
Verizon.
Right.
For callers...
That's the long and the short of it.
For listeners who are familiar with this...
They're taking out support for copper. They're going to rip it up and destroy it. I said, you're not even recycling it. Maybe the person I spoke to doesn't really know all those details, but He said they're just destroying it. And I said, well, what are you going to do with it? Matter can be neither created nor destroyed. He didn't know.
Well, for those listeners who may not be familiar with this story, we've been following this for a while. It parallels many stories that are going on throughout the world, where basically this listener wanted to preserve her landline, her copper line. And Verizon is going around saying, no, you can't have it anymore. You have to have Fios, and we're just not going to support copper anymore. Big mistake, because copper lines are more dependable.
They say that the problem is that water gets into the copper and eats it away, and they can't get in to repair it. A lot of historical housing, you're not allowed to. In other places, they don't have permission. And the copper is always getting eaten away by water, and they just can't do it anymore.
You know, they were able to do it for 100 years. I'm not sure why it's so difficult now. And there's less lines to maintain, less work overall. People should have the right to use the technology they want to use. But I know it's hard to convince others of this.
Yeah, well, they have the federal permission, and they're going with it.
Wow. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. I guess the elected official you contacted is of no use at this point?
that it that nothing has worked.
Well, let him know. Yeah, if he doesn't know that they've done this, maybe he can still do something. But at least let everybody know that this is what's happening. Must be difficult in this holiday season to be losing something as precious as a landline.
Well, this isn't the only thing. I mean, this is my phone line, which is certainly important to me, isolated as I am alone in my apartment. But I'm going through other things. Mm-hmm. My mother, my extremely elderly mother, is... was in the hospital, rehab, and hospital again, and now we're trying to arrange for her to come home for hospice care at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very grim.
Yeah.
And I can't help wondering, now she's going to need 24-hour care, which means, you know, 2 12-hour aides. And with COVID, how can, you know, any aid service guarantee that their aides will be there? I mean, nursing homes are shutting down because they don't have the staffing. And she needs 2 people just for her lonesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm discouraged that she's not trying hard enough to recover, that she's instead decided she's tired and had enough.
Well, that tends to happen the older you get. But unfortunately, that's one of the realities. But there are advocates in various places, whether it's in hospitals or healthcare facilities or health insurance companies even, that will try and arrange things. Doesn't always happen, doesn't always work out, but you know, at least exploring all of those options might make it easier on you.
Well, the thing is, my brother has power of attorney, so I have no say about anything. And that's another thing that's discouraging.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure.
And the her insurance, assuming that a doctor authorizes hospice care, you know, they have to certify she's not expected to live more than 6 months. I don't know whether that particular hoop has been jumped through, but the hospice care doesn't cover 2 12-hour aides. And so I'm wondering, will this eat up all that she would otherwise pass on?
Well, not to sound too callous, but that is the intent of the industry, is to eat that up and to use every bit that's left of someone's savings, someone's life. It's how they work. It's their bread and butter.
It's for profit.
Yeah, they're for profit. Sorry to be so bitter about that, but I've seen it happen, and it's
yeah,
not pretty.
Well, I don't blame you for saying what's true.
Yeah.
Well, we are always and often advocating for perhaps changing attitudes and less emphasis on that in particular, and more empathy in all realms, whether it is ethics and technology or real life, it applies.
The thing that it comes down to in the end, these are stressful times for somebody to go through. You know, dealing with an elderly relative nearing the end of their lives, that is not the time to be stressing them out with either bills or obligations or difficulties coordinating things. There should be a system there that exists to get them through that and to make things easier, not harder. And I know saying that isn't going to do a damn bit of good, but that's how I feel about that. And if anyone knows of a system where it works well, please let us know and we'll pass that on.
Oh, by the way, when you turned up the pot,
uh-huh,
your sound did go up and it was much nicer.
Okay, that's good to know. You're talking about on YouTube?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, thanks for the feedback. And
you're welcome.
Sorry for the negativity this week, but fingers crossed that next year will be a better year for all of us.
that people would get over their fears and get vaccinated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mandates, you know, if you have enough mandates, then you don't have to reason with people who are irrational.
Yeah, we wouldn't need the mandates. We would not need mandates if people were acting with a little bit of rationality. And I don't think it's fear. I think it's just stubbornness that is keeping people from doing the right thing. They want to be proven right.
I think it's people having a hard time accepting reality, even confronting that this is actually the occurring, and we are all collectively experiencing this in the vast myriad ways, along with the many other things in our lives.
Yeah, it's gotten to the stage where even Trump can't convince them. He's saying he got the booster, the vaccine is good. They're booing him now. It's, you know, he helped create this, and now he can't contain it. And God help all of us, because I don't know what it's going to take to convince people that what they're doing is deadly wrong and is basically holding everything up.
And if we can't get through it, there's no hope really for getting accountability. You know, there's a lot of questions and people want some accountability and we can't even confront that. We can't even look at how things have gone because people dispute it occurring at all. Which is a terrible, terrible place to be. So I've the same despair in various moments. I definitely have I've felt better in other parts of my life.
It's like living with a young sibling where you're constantly arguing, and even when you're right, they will never admit that you're right, and they'll keep making things up to make you wrong. And you think that you'll win, and even when you do win, you still lose because the fighting never stops. That's where we are now. That's where this country is. Maybe even the world at this point.
And then the world's like looking to try to maybe get some leadership or wants to know what we think, you know, us humble, even American hackers, you know. And, you know, we need a lot of help. We've needed a lot of help, and things are different here. We have different dynamics, and it's a lot. It's a lot to take on, and we've just been trying to galvanize people around communicating and sharing and trying to make a difference as best you can, however big or small.
Anyway, with that in mind, caller, have a happy new year, and we hope to hear from you next year.
See you next year.
All right, take care. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. Here's a letter that we got from a listener. Look at that. We got another call right away. Let's see. I was just listening to your program. I came across a truly independent phone company. This one serves an Indian reservation. It's called the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe Telephone Authority. Yeah, and best part, their main phone number ends in 2600. Imagine that. The last four numbers, 2600. Thank you, Brian, for sending that in and for basically finding what we were talking about last week, an independent phone company. They're still out there. And I think the future will be independent phone companies everywhere that are basically run by the community or by an organization or by somebody that actually cares. I think we lost that call, so the phone lines are open, 802-321-4225. Go ahead, Rob.
While we're waiting for a call, I just want to quickly impart some sad news. The New York City hacker community lost one of our own last week when Joel Diort, who was known under his handle Dernan, was killed in a traffic accident while on a trip to Hawaii. He was a great friend to a great many of us and a regular attendee of the New York City 2600 meetings. He was a regular HOPE attendee. He spoke at HOPE a couple of times, and he is a deeply felt loss. And if you want to learn more about him, go to nyc2600.net, where there's a little bit about him on the front page there. And I just want to, you know, say rest in peace. A great many of us are going to miss you terribly.
Yeah, terribly sad to hear that. And just seeing the community respond is moving. But boy, it's something that I don't think any of us really know how to handle right now. Alex, go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
Sorry, there was actually a great response to the notice was posted, and his family had to put up a fundraiser to transport his remains from Hawaii back home to New York and cover his final expenses. And that fundraiser has been very successful. So like the community has pitched in and been a great help. You could see that as well on nyc2600.net. And he was very young. He was lost far too soon. And yeah, it's heartbreaking. It's disastrous.
Yeah, it really is. Go ahead, Alex.
Anytime you lose a friend, it leaves a hole in your heart, Rob. I think that that never really heals. And I didn't know him. I'm sure I came across him, I'm sure at Hope or maybe a 2600 meeting or something like that. But the way you had described him and the tribute that you put together, I would encourage all of our listeners to read, because it really was a fitting tribute from somebody who was obviously a dear friend. And all of it rang true. It really moved me. So I would encourage everybody to go and read that tribute. And just from my experience and having lost friends, I can say that, that hurt never really goes away, but you come to peace with it in some strange way. Time heals all wounds. That's the platitude that we have. I don't think that that's accurate. I think that the wounds are always going to be there. It's just somehow we come to peace with them. We come to respect and almost cherish those types of wounds and scars that we carry with us. So,
well, they're a sign of caring. You know, I learn that every time I lose somebody close to me, whether it's human, whether it's, a pet, that it's always a blessing in a way that you feel something. You know, I get that. But at the same time, we need to do everything possible to keep that from happening prematurely, or in ways that are preventable, whether it's an accident like this particular case, whether it's a pandemic, which is avoidable if people do the right thing, whether it's people who are at wit's end and have nobody to talk to. We can do more. We can be out there. We can exist to help those around us, and we can basically check in on those around us and people we haven't talked to in a while, because everyone's fragile. Everyone's human. Everyone is looking for something more, and none of us are an exception to that. Okay, we have a phone call, and good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Good evening, Overtime.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria. Do I have that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Wanted to make sure you didn't go to a different country. So how are you this fine Thursday morning for you?
Well, nearly. It's the morning of the last day of the German event that's being...
Yes, the Chaos Communication Congress is happening right now. It's not happening in real life. It's happening online.
Yes, it's the remote chaos experience.
The remote chaos experience, and that's why it's called what now?
RC3.
Okay. And you can, what's the website to watch talks?
streaming.media.ccc.de.
A lot of dots there. streaming.media.ccc.de. And I imagine somewhere in there is a schedule that you can see. And you can just listen to all kinds of different talks, and watch ones that have been given already.
I have to catch up with the first 3 days of it, because I couldn't. It's sitting in front of a TV screen and watching them remotely is not quite what I expect from these days towards the end of December, because
it's all they have right now.
I don't know. I find it's quite soothing to drink coffee and roll joints and just listen to interesting conversations. I listened to one about why we're addicted to lithium and batteries, and today there was one about FPV drones, which is first person view, which I think is fascinating. I think that's going to be something. I continue to follow. And there was just other really intriguing ones. There's one on union busting. I'm trying to think of the other couple days. Just trying to get connected. It's a little bit difficult. I understand that, definitely, watching TV. But if you have other things going on, it's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, and you're about 6 hours in the past from Hamburg or Germany time zone, so it's a bit different.
It's easier to coordinate. Yeah. Yeah, like I can get midday, like basically right in the middle of the day in the East Coast.
It somehow syncs, so it makes it easier for us. But
yep.
But yeah, like right now, I think there are things still going on. There's a lounge where people are playing music, and it's weird. You think it's a place, but it's really not a place. It's a stream, and there's multiple streams going, and that's what we did in 2020. That's what a lot of conferences have done.
Going talk to talk, you felt like you're actually changing channels, which is kind of what they're saying about the experience, their perspective as a virtual thing. And we felt the same way when we were running Hope virtually.
But we know it's not the same thing. We know being in person is much better. You know, we do little things to make it authentic. We've got bratwurst cooking in the backyard, and occasionally we just knock over a Club Mate bottle to make that noise. Do we have one? Oh, there you go. I didn't know we had one right here. You know, we save old bottles. Yeah, whenever you go to a talk...
Well, they're refundable, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Kyle, you're knocking other things over now.
Well, sorry that I hit something.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yes, please.
You changed the introduction picture for the overtime in recent weeks with a child spitting out stuff. Or something
yeah,
like
I'm
that.
Not sure. It's the will be removed picture now. I see. How did it get changed back? I didn't change it back.
Wow, the will be removed picture is during the overtime time, but before it starts with a child spitting out a bunch of droplets of some sort.
Yeah. The old and Norman Rockwell classic. It's a beautiful painting.
Is it?
Well, I think so. Hmm. Everyone here in America thinks so. But I didn't know there were two different ones. I didn't know it would reverted back to the will be removed thing. But, you know, I don't watch the stream as we're doing.
I think the will be removed thing says he has a word blacked out, which is bags or dogs or something like
something
that.
Something will be removed. We don't know what will be removed because they removed that from the sign. And if you're watching us on YouTube now, you'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I haven't looked at what it may have changed to.
My guesses are dogs or bags, one of the two.
You can't just remove a dog. The dog has to agree to be removed. With bags, though, you can remove bags. You can, you know, yeah.
And if there are dogs in the bag.
But I don't know, why would you make a permanent sign that says bags will be removed? I mean, is it a problem?
Well,
people leave bags right there?
Maybe bags were left there with bad intent, such as
on January
explosives
4th.
Or some such. Maybe. I don't know.
Hmm. Yet another mystery, Bobson, that you bring us, and we have to...
Hey, you brought it just on yourself.
We just posted a damn picture that one of us took years ago, and we don't even know where it's from. But that's just more mysteries for us to add.
Do you have any predictions, Bobson, for the coming year?
Well, for the coming year, it's going to be here next week.
That's not a prediction.
I hope people who got vaccinated in the first half of the current year have been boosted by now.
That's also not a prediction. That's a hope.
Boosted. I like that. Yeah. Okay. That's
I had my third needle for the year a couple weeks back, and I think it's advisable for people who have had two doses for the vaccine to get the third one.
Again, not a prediction. That's a memory and advice. We're looking for a prediction. Do you have anything to predict for 2022?
I don't expect any. I think there's gonna be hope.
Oh,
it's happening the same time as the Dutch meeting in the Netherlands.
Well, it's a Dutch hacker camp, and yes, we're planning dual conferences that weekend, July 22nd to 24th, in person, in New York at the St. John's campus. It's going to be awesome. We're planning it right now, and that's not really a prediction, though. That's more like a scheduled event.
Well, yes, that's something I can predict for next year. I don't think there's going to be another container ship blocking the Suez Canal next year or some such stupid.
All right, well, then that's Bobson's prediction, is that there will not be a container ship blocking the Suez Canal in 2022. Good prediction, and we'll see if that comes true.
Okay, I'm not putting any money on it, but well.
Okay, we'll see what we want to wager here. Anything else, Bobson, before we move on? Actually, Alex, I think, wants to interrogate you more about something.
Bobson, I'm so glad that you called this evening. I was really, really hoping you would, because coincidentally, just before Christmas, I was able to make a run to my local Bulgarian grocery store here in Pennsylvania and pick up an assortment of fantastic Bulgarian cookies.
Oh, boy.
I wanted to ask your opinion about the, in particular, these circular cookies called the Traiana. Have you had these?
No. I may have seen them in a store, but I haven't.
You were able to resist, whereas Alex was not.
I certainly was not. They were very appealing to me, both visually and when you tasted them, they were really quite good as well. I mean, a little bit dry. I feel like a lot of these Bulgarian cookies might be a little bit dry. Would that be a fair characterization of your cookies?
Well, I think it may have to do with the distance traveled, and if you come over and get them here where they're closer to where they're manufactured, it may be less so.
Well, Alex, if I can ask, you have a child on your lap right now, and children like cookies. Did this child like that cookie, or did you even share that cookie with that child?
With this child,
that one, yes,
on my lap.
Yeah,
yes. You mean my firstborn?
I
son.
Didn't share with him. I snuck them.
Excellent.
Uh huh.
Well played.
Yes. Good for you. Not sharing. That's what we want.
This firstborn son that carries my name did in fact have a favorite Bulgarian cookie, the name of which we can't recall it. But what was it? What is the name? How would you describe that cookie, Sasha?
Nice and pure.
What?
Nice and pure.
Nice and pure. But what did it have in the middle? A jelly. It had a jelly in the middle, and it was a hard cookie on the top and the bottom, obviously, with a chocolate coating on the outside.
I want this now. I want this.
Yeah, it's delectable.
Get more and send them to me, please.
Yeah, you got
to
take a picture of the wrapper or something. Yeah.
Absolutely could. In fact, you know, I have a picture of all.
Well,
the
I could probably help with the reading of the wrapper.
Well, hang on, Bobson. It sounds like Alex might have some remnants of this cookie, not of the cookie itself, but of the package.
I think I do have a picture of the package.
You took a picture of the package.
I think it's lowercase Cyrillic.
Okay, wait a minute. Bobson can't see us, so how's this going to work?
I know, that's what I'm saying. I would have to sound it out.
Okay.
And it could be very difficult for me to do that, I think.
Letter by letter might be the best way to go about it.
We got to up our Cyrillic.
Yeah, can you? Your child might be able to do that.
Pronunciations. And...
Well,
see if he has Cyrillic installed in his operating system.
Yeah, he might actually. That's true.
A lot of kids these days come with that.
That is true. Oh, here we go. Here's the box of the cookies. Okay. So one of them is the Traiana, which was really fantastic, and then the other one. This is the one actually that Sasha really liked here. It looks like Baravu or something like that. It's like a BAPABEY.
BATA?
EY, actually. E, kind of like a U, but with the a symbol of a Y underneath it, that sort of character.
So that sounds like U when it's read, so.
Yes. Okay.
Can you repeat it slowly so I can figure out how to read it?
Varavio, maybe, or something like that? Because it looks like a B with a horizontal line on top.
And ooh, then a cursive. Why would there be a horizontal line on top? So,
what are you asking us for? It's your language.
Yes, exactly. It looks like a lowercase b with a horizontal line going across the...
Oh, okay. So that's a B sound.
Right. B, and then what looks like an A, P-A. And then a lowercase B, E, and then the U symbol.
Bara something.
Yeah,
the P is a R.
Oh.
I think, right?
It's Bara. What's the fifth letter?
It looks like a cursive B, like a script B.
Baraba. Okay. Something like that.
So I think that's it. So are you familiar with these cookies?
I've seen them in a store at some point. I haven't tried them.
You should try them.
Yeah, apparently you have an assignment now from Alex that you must try these.
Yeah, you got to try these. You absolutely do it. And then next week, I really want to hear your opinion of them, because these were definitely our favorites. And if they're tastier locally in Bulgaria, that's even hard for me to imagine.
And you have 2 weeks, actually, because we're not on next week. But that also gives you an extra week,
yeah,
Alex, to somehow get us some packages. Yeah, I think, Alex, you should send them to Gila and Rob and Kyle and myself, and so that we can all talk about these cookies in 2 weeks.
You know what? We've got plenty of time to do it. I'm happy to make a run back to the local Bulgarian grocery store and make that happen.
Okay, if you go now, you might get there before they close.
Well, you're getting a road trip organized.
Uh-huh. Well, we got to do something for fun, you know? It's
maybe overestimating the demand for that store. But what's interesting, too, is there were a whole bunch of Bulgarian people in this store, and I had asked... you know, is this like a hotbed of Bulgarians here? And they said, yes, there's a lot of Bulgarians over here in northeastern Pennsylvania. It's something I didn't know, but would explain the presence of that grocery store.
It would. Bobson, anything else from you before we move on? Maybe talk about something else than Bulgarian cookies.
Well, I still didn't figure out the child with the spitting child picture that I asked about, but oh well.
Well, only because none of us know either.
Okay.
And if we can distract you with Bulgarian cookies instead, we'll do that, other than admit it.
Do I need to look into Rockwell's work, or are you making that up?
Yeah, it wasn't Norman Rockwell.
If you can tell us which overtime and tell us what time in the video...
Well, no, it's there. I can show it to you. It's
on the recorded overtimes of December.
Oh, okay, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware.
Start with the...
Okay, okay.
The pre-show... Pre-overtime recordings, parts of the recordings have the child with the...
Yeah, if you look at the archive, you'll see it.
Yep.
We just never do that.
Oh, well.
Bobson, great hearing from you. Have a happy new year. How do you say happy new year in Bulgarian?
Честита нова година.
All right, well, same to you.
Justin Aliadina. Yep.
Yes. All right. Good hearing from you. Take care.
Have a wonderful 2022, people.
All right. Let's have a wonderful remaining 2021, however many days are left. Wow. Alex, that's an incredible story of the Bulgarian cookie, and we're learning so much about Bulgarian food for some reason on this show.
Well, you know, you gotta take the crunchy with the smooth, I guess.
We're shopping vicariously. It's incredible how worldly, and just goes to show you that's the depths of Hacker Radio Show. It goes all over, and we like learning about new things and phrases and lettering even.
What if Bulgarian cookies is actually a code word that we're using for something incredibly nefarious?
Yeah, don't say that out loud. Alex, for God's sake. Yeah.
We have spoken on this program about accepting and rejecting cookies, haven't we?
Yeah, this is the part we're not supposed to say out loud.
We're doing so well.
Yeah, really. okay, always one blabbermouth. So anyway, you might get this, I don't know why the headline says this. This is from a newspaper over in England called The Sun. Basically, the headline is Gmail and Outlook users warned to delete this threatening message pretending to be Amazon. I'm not sure why they're targeting just Gmail and Outlook users. Anyone can get the email, not just them. So right away, the headline is stupid. But you might get an email that comes from Amazon. It's got the Amazon logo, so it's got to be them if it's got the logo. And it says, "Greetings from Amazon. We have locked your Amazon account." Don't you love those letters? They start off friendly, and then they tell you something bad. Yeah, greetings from Amazon. We have locked your Amazon account and all pending orders. We have taken this action because the billing information you provided does not match the information on file with the card issuer. To resolve this issue, please verify now with the billing name, address, and phone number stored on your credit card. If you have recently moved, you may need to update this information with the card issuer. If we cannot complete the verification process within 3 days, all pending orders will be canceled. I said it that way because there's a period after the word orders. You will not be able to access your account until this process is complete. We ask that you do not open new account as any new order you place may be delayed. Okay, a couple of things. Every time somebody fakes something like this, they make a mistake someplace. That misplaced period, for instance, shouldn't be there. You would never get that on official communication from Amazon. Also, you would not get a sentence like, "We ask that you do not open new account." It would be a new account or something like that. All the fake notices that I've ever seen always have something that indicates that they're fake. But a lot of people are falling for this. And what they do is they inadvertently click on things and they share information they're not supposed to be sharing. But really, the thing is, if your billing information doesn't match, you won't get a letter this threatening from Amazon or from anybody else saying that everything is being canceled and your account is being destroyed and you must give us this information right now. It'll be much more polite than that, and you can look at the headers, and they will basically show you that where the email actually came from. Any of you guys have any experience with this?
I mean, there is one main. One main way you could defend yourself against any of these, and you don't have to be technical to do it, if you get any kind of email that says your such and such account has been locked or, you know, has been deleted or anything like that, just go to that website, not by clicking on the links in the email, but go to like Amazon.com and type in your account info, log in like you always do. And if there is actually a problem and it's legitimate and it's from Amazon, you'll get some kind of pop-up when you log in there. If you get an email that says we've disabled your eBay account, go to eBay.com, type that into your browser, log in there as you always do. And if there's a problem, you'll get a pop-up of some sort letting you know this. They will never just send you an email and leave it at that. So, you know, it's basically rule one with things like that.
Some of them are quite good. Some of them are very convincing. But this is not one that I saw as being particularly authentic, but a lot of people are falling for it. Yes, Gila.
They're not often convincing, but even if they are, one way to do this works better on a desktop than on a phone, but still very important, is if you hover your mouse over the name of the sender, it will show you what email address it came from. And if it is actually from, you know, orders@amazon.com, or if it's from 9YZZZX16Q at internet.fake.com.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's exactly it.
It's also a really good way to spot a fake.
Yes.
Yeah, it's such a good advice. You make that part of your routine, just going through, looking for basic things in deeper and deeper levels as if it's something especially you might be enticed to look into. Don't be trusting off the bat. Be skeptical.
Alex, quickly, we have a call.
Yeah, sure. Further to Geetha's point is that sometimes it's possible to spoof an actual email address to make it seem as if it came from somebody else, like a legitimate orders@amazon.com. But one way that you can very often determine whether or not the email address is spoofed is to try to reply to the email, because the reply to address is going to very often show you the actual address from which it was sent. Rather than that, you can spoof the sender address, but the reply to address will show.
Well, you know what? That's a simple setting that you can easily make the reply to go to the spoof or to a real address as well, what looks like a real address. Look at the full headers. And if you don't have an email service that gives you the full headers, then you don't have a real email service. Let's see if we have a call on the line. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
Okay.
How's everyone doing?
Where are you calling from? Who is this? Genevieve.
Vancouver.
Vancouver, British Columbia, from Canada. Wow.
Yep.
It's a great province.
You guys have gotten a lot of snow, haven't you? Or this bad weather?
Oh, this year has been proof of global warming to most of the doubters.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of temperature, we've gone from minus 20 Celsius to plus 50 Celsius this year. So basically like 5 below to like 110 Fahrenheit.
But not in the same week, right? Summertime.
No,
okay.
But the swing.
Yeah.
The 12-month, the swing.
Right.
Season to season.
That's something. How is it?
And then last.
Yeah, how is it now?
It's chilly, but it's unusually covered in snow, which is pretty nice.
That is nice. You know, I've got my fingers crossed that snow will make it to New York at some point. But the climate change is really, I read today that a massive iceberg off Antarctica might break off and really cause some mayhem globally. Maybe irrecoverable mayhem. And it's serious. It really is serious.
It is serious. I mean, folks up here are trying to do their part, but, you know, action up here by itself doesn't help when other parts are not helping. I mean, for example, if you contrast the grid, I mean, in Canada, for example, if you excluded Alberta and Saskatchewan, Canada would be the greenest country in the West.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, those two provinces by themselves, thanks to all the fossil fuel extraction and use, they just bring down the average.
Yeah, the economic priorities are overshadowing, and I think what's been made plain, and I felt strong message from the youth movements around climate change, is we need to stop blaming ourselves. I think generations before have been blaming themselves. They've been told that it's a consumer issue, and it really is the major players in energy and those economic priorities taking an outsize part of permissiveness of allowing repealing the kind of environmental strictures around their activities. That stuff has been made plain as a huge chunk of the actual things we need to look at to mitigate.
Well, I mean, look at this. As far as consumers, how many consumers are there in Alberta and Saskatchewan? Compare that to Ontario and Quebec. You know, if Alberta and Saskatchewan are the ones dragging the country down, it's not about the consumers, it's about the industry. Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, just looking at something like as simple as energy production. For example, Quebec and British Columbia, the electricity grid is over 95% renewables, mostly in the form of hydro.
That high?
When you look at Alberta, yeah. And what else? They also are publicly owned, generally speaking, and as a result, you know, rates are cheap in both of those provinces. Then you go to Alberta, which is semi-privatized, and they burn tons of coal and gas. It's and a lot more expensive.
Are there also parts of British Columbia that are doing that as well? Because I seem to recall when we were driving down with the dogs, it looked like there was a lot of logging and it looked like strip mining or something.
There is a lot of logging, though, in fairness, they do actually replant trees at a better rate than basically anywhere else. They, for every tree that's cut down, three are replanted, and it's multiple species to avoid the monoculture problem.
Yeah, it definitely got worse.
Gas extraction is also a problem in the north, too.
Yeah, it just basically gets the you notice more and more of it as you head east, especially towards Alberta, the tar sands and various development out there. But it just wreaks. I mean, it just gets so much emphasis so quickly. It's truly harkens back to boom and bust culture, and we need to really pay attention to the bust of these choices. It's a short-term, like, sugar rush, and we're all about, like, booms for whatever is trendy in the moment, but we need to start really looking at the after effects, because it's devastating when those choices beat out other things, and, you know, we're already seeing it with the permissiveness around nuclear. It's going to get all the money for metallurgy and pipe steam fitters. It's going to get all of that to build, like, tons of micro nuclear plants, and they're going to call it green and, like, super efficient and great.
Nuclear is not green, and I really, it annoys me that so many people, especially intelligent people, seem to think that it is. You know, when you have to dispose of nuclear waste and keep it safe for tens of thousands of years, that ain't green, okay?
The only exception, in my opinion, is if you are decommissioning weapons-grade materials and using that for peaceful energy production or medical purposes, whatever it is. But you got to actually be doing that, and that's not occurring in the U.S. I don't know about what Canada's situation is, but even that is incredibly high risk. And, you know, this
is
like
nuclear in Canada.
No, there isn't.
And it involves
Ontario really has it.
Only Ontario?
Is it Ontario?
Yeah, nuclear may not be green. The biggest advantage of it, though, is that it doesn't produce carbon. And
right.
It is possible to reduce the amount of waste. I mean, for example, the French recycle used fuel. So in the end, the amount that they have in the end that's unused is an order of magnitude less than the U.S., where they don't allow reprocess.
Right, right. But what do they do with whatever waste they have? I mean, we just found a time capsule from the Civil War, and we had no idea what was in it. And that's just, you know, 130 or so years ago.
The time frames. I mean, it may be, like, there's a lot of emphasis around it being, the thought is it's trend. This is helping with transitions, but a lot of the second and third generation renewable tech gets hamstrung, or it gets no tax credits, no benefit, the way fossil fuels have, and they don't actually get to scale. So we just keep pushing the transitional fuels because we're in perpetual transition that never occurs. That's what gas has been doing in gasification and fracking, I find it's a very similar thing, because the time frames to build and commission and then have a nuclear power plant, however big, are very long planning times. It's incredibly high cost. A town is they're forced to kind of reckon with that for a very long period of time, and the fuel that we do have, it all kind of goes into one big pit. You know, all the stuff that's military, all the stuff that's for power, all the waste ends up, it has to go somewhere. We don't have places to put it. It ends up in a pit in eastern Washington. There's a pit in Texas. That's where all the reactors from the subs and the ships go. And that's it. That's all we have. We've talked about putting it in mountains in Nevada. We've talked about doing all kinds of crazy stuff with it. But it ends up just sitting in remote deserts where it's a target, where it's, you know, not managed, or it's just sitting there and will be there for thousands, thousands of years for people invariably to forget about and mess up later on.
And someone's going to come up with a bright idea to put it on the moon. All I'm saying is when you do that, you got to worry about the launch, okay? And, of course, firing it into the sun, that solves a lot of problems too, but getting it off the ground, that's a challenge.
Well, there's one thing about the energy mix that I was going to actually make one of those predictions you were asking about. I don't know, maybe it may not pan out as much this year as in this decade, but there's low-hanging fruit in renewables, and one of the lowest-hanging fruit would be solarizing building roofs. The cost of solar has decreased by a factor of 50 since 2010.
Wow.
And as a result, I mean, solarization is, relatively speaking, dirt cheap, easy, and safe to at least supplement peak demands. Storage still becomes a problem, but at least that energy production, carbon-free production that's easy and distributed is a good idea that needs to be more widely used, especially if you remember that the scam of the solar freaking roadways. They were trying to get this idea, and I think that the base of it is okay, but the implementation is impossible when you've got a much simpler answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that those pieces of technology in like all kinds of different applications, all kinds of places, embedded in materials, like you're saying, it's a lot more possible now, I think, material science in electric or hybrid cars and building infrastructure in cities, factories, the kind of recapture and reusing of various parts of the production engineering process are really in vogue and popular, because that's that lowers the cost of producing materials, whatever that is, and especially in energy and chemical production. So co-locating those technologies that are safe and can help with the manufacturer and their operations, I think are the real kind of direction things are going in, like data center technology with computing and telecommunications. People are looking at ways to run things cooler, ways to deal with heating and cooling, especially with all the wild temperatures that we have, a lot of with geothermal. And so there's those things, they can't be distinct and in islands, and they can't be up against with like fake green stuff, in my opinion, like trotted out as like worthy of equal attention. We need to really double down on things that are that can complement and work in a sort of symbiotic way with traditional. That's kind of what I was talking about with my prediction, like the older stuff with new, like retro computing, adapting, making some of the older technologies function better in the newer climate, whether that's more sensors and technology to run it and operate better, or adapting, like retrofitting.
Yeah, I'm like new developments, for example. I mean, I'm living in a new part of Vancouver. I'm in the city proper, and every building in this development is connected up to a district energy system instead of having individual furnaces or air conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
As a result, the energy cost is dirt cheap, and the energy needed to heat up all these buildings is much lower than it would be with individual inefficient systems, plus less maintenance.
And like places in the Northwest, I mean, just apartment complexes with like baseboard electric heaters. That's like the Northwest, like comfort zone. I don't know. It's like their style is like really cheap buildings with a lot of electric heating and no air conditioning because it never gets warm in the Northwest.
Oh, well, right.
That's all changing.
So there is an interesting thing about those baseboard heaters that get too hot. I mean, those are essentially an evolution of old radiators.
And which were part of the modern, central, yeah.
Yeah, the typical radiator design that you find from a building from, say, the 1920s to the 1970s, they were actually designed to run hot so that they would be overheating, at least in terms of a comfort level, because it was supposed to force you to open a window. This was actually pandemic-related design connected with the Spanish flu.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And those same systems, if it's run with like a water-based system instead of electric coils, it can be efficient. But you're absolutely right. There are these legacy technologies we've built over and over, and maybe in certain areas we should look back and question a little bit, or just recognize that something is completely forked off into a direction that's inefficient. It's just not serving us. It may have been once before.
Well, I wonder what else we can learn from reaction to the Spanish flu, which, you know, by the way, is not from Spain, came from America. But
yeah.
That right there tells me that people were going through the same struggles, and maybe they had some solutions that we could learn something from. Alex, did you have something?
Well, I just said, didn't we mention this as well a couple of weeks ago? We talk about the design of the radiators coming from the Spanish flu days, and how, you know, powerful they were. Now, I think they were actually designed so that you could have them on and still have the windows open.
You're saying we talked about this already? I don't remember that.
Yeah, we did. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Who brought it up?
I did. That's why I remember it.
Okay.
Oh.
I don't remember it at all. But
me up about this.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was this show.
Yeah, some of the things.
Well, how many other shows do you do?
Yeah, this is it, really. Yeah.
I thought this was in a Times piece. Okay, no one knows where this came from.
I think you're a time traveler, Alex, and you actually were remembering this conversation, and he just came back from the future.
Maybe it's a 20... Possible.
Anyway, let's let Genevieve finish her thoughts here. Any other input here?
Well, I do have one other prediction for the next year, based on how pandemics normally go. God's willing, by the end of next year, we'll enter essentially a low pandemic period, where instead of it being large general problems that come up, large scale solutions that have to be implemented for safety to try and limit or at least control spread, by the end of next year, we'll be into a low pandemic period where you'll see maybe some more localized, targeted issues when hotspots come up. But in general, for most people, most of the time, it won't be a problem.
Well, that sounds like an optimistic prediction. So hopefully we will see something like that happen.
Yep, one can hope.
All right. Well, great hearing from you. And hope everything is going as well as it could out there in BC.
Yeah, have a good New Year.
Yep, and hopefully next year in July.
Yes, for hope, a new hope. All right, talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
All right, great hearing from Genevieve and from everybody tonight. And since it's now after 9 o'clock, I think we should maybe, you know, call it a night, because that's late for us.
I actually there's some other things I was hoping to get to tonight, so
okay,
if we could just wrap it up.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's, you just get a little,
oh, you mean things not having to do with the show you want to get to tonight?
I thought maybe we could do something other than that.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it was not a huge priority, but I mean, I'm just sort of sitting here.
Alex, you seem to have something to say here.
I would love to go back to our last show, since you ask the same questions every year. Go back to our last show in 2019 and hear what the hell we had to say.
Not 2020. We didn't do it in 2020?
We must have done it in 2020.
Well, you said 2019.
2019, our predictions for 2020. I would love to hear those.
Well, how about our predictions for 2021, the year that we're in right now? If we did it last year. I don't think we did it last year, though.
I thought we did. I thought we did. Don't we do something like this every year?
I thought we did, but in the summations, I didn't see any reference to it, so I don't know.
It's been fairly consistent, but there may have been so much going on last year between the election and the insurrection that we were a little bit flustered.
But the insurrection was after the new year, so...
Right, but remember, in between, there was a lot of, like...
You can say that word, but don't say it, because it demeans
us. There was a lot of stuff being thrown around. It was kind of a frenzied time, is, I guess, all I'm saying.
I think we were just happy to have made it through 2020. Rob?
Yeah, we did get an email from someone called TMG1 who was listening to our old shows, listened to the July 22nd, 2015 show, and apparently we were talking about such things on that episode. They write, as per that episode, the quote of this decade being, as predicted, can't you just unplug it, is holding up so far. And I appreciate that. I know a lot of you out there are listening to, you know, the occasional older show, and we would love to hear your thoughts on things that we were saying long ago and see how they've held up and not held up. So, you know, do get in touch with us with your thoughts on those, as well as what we're saying nowadays.
I would also like to put out there that we were indeed on this particular streaming program. We have an overtime archived from December 30th, 2020. So we may have done this there.
Right. Well, someone has to listen to that one. But it's great that people listen to the old shows. They're all online. We save everything. 2600.com/offthehook. And we save all of our radio shows, whether they're on this station and the other station or on YouTube. And yeah, we believe your voices should be preserved, you being the listener. And also, it's a time capsule of what's been going on over the years, over the decades. Any final thoughts for the year, guys?
Well, we got through it. We're still getting through it, but we got through this one.
Uh-huh. Gila, anything?
Yeah. I mean, just be careful. Be safe. We can do this if we do this together.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
Yeah. I think echoing what I said earlier, I think 2022, we have to have empathy over apathy. And I wish you all the very best, good fortune, health, and safety in 2022.
Kyle?
Sad to see BlackBerry 10 and 3G go away.
Do you want to go into this? you're having one hell of a time with certain companies.
Yeah. My carrier
abandoned.
Let's just say
they abandoned you.
There's a certain telephone and telegraph company that is not really too keen on letting me bring a particular device onto their network, and they're shutting down everything else. So it's made life quite interesting, and I ended up trying to activate some things and do some stuff. I ended up in a store that basically got so frustrated, they said, why don't you go to another store? And I basically am convinced, I honestly want to talk to someone at this telephone and telegraph company that has some power, because clearly no one there does.
Okay, well, we're going to give that a shot, I guess, before we make this public. Oh, I think we should make it public in the end anyway, because what you're going through is inexcusable. You know, you buy a phone that's supposed to work, and no one can figure out how to make it work. It's ridiculous. These people really don't understand their own technology.
The retail store I went to had temporary hour changes, too, and it said, like, we're only allowing customers 65 and up to come in during these hours. And the hours were, like, 8 a.m. to 10, or I don't know, 10 to 8 p.m. So all day, every 7 days a week, the only people that can go to a physical store that can't even help me in my search situation are people over 65. So
that's why you needed that mask?
Yeah, so you can't do it online. You can't activate on the phone because no one knows what they're doing on the phone. And they just said, you know, the system isn't allowing you. And the system hasn't let this handset work with this service. So
that's when you stand up and say, damn it, I am the system.
I am the system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Gumby, and I pay for this. That's the other exciting part.
That's true.
Part.
You do pay for this, literally, every month.
I pay to be abused by these people.
And you keep coming back for more.
Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, they can't shake me.
All right. Well, tune in coming weeks to see how Kyle does with his phone company and his phone. Rob, did you have something you want to add?
Yeah, I'm just proud that we at Off the Hook are ending this year in a proper way for us and this program, which is by complaining about a telephone company.
Absolutely. And by saying that the old phone company should be preserved and the old phone lines and everything like that.
Because we could run it better.
We could. We'd drive their trucks better.
It'd be different. But
all right. We're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Write to us, LTH at 2600.com. See you in 2 weeks. Good night.